Okay, well, welcome everybody to the Quill Inquiry podcast. My name is Brandon Hall. I'm joined as always by my wonderful co-host Ash. Ash, how are you doing today? For those who didn't just
We're trucking
hear
along,
us.
Brandon. Yeah, we're trucking along. How are you doing today?
Same as you. I feel like I say that every week, but
It's
it's been a week already. It's only Tuesday, but we're gonna get through it.
only Tuesday. We're doing our best.
Yeah.
That's all we can ask.
Well, we have some fun topics to go over today. Actually, some of these seem pretty on point for what you just said about your author website. I wanted to talk a little bit about things like author newsletters. Maybe we can talk a little bit about author websites in there too now. Book pricing, antagonists, story pacing, and a few other topics. I don't like to spoil them all ahead of time. I just like to name a few of them. But yeah, those are some of the topics we have today. But before we get into all of that, Ash, what are you reading?
I am still working through The Witchstone, my ARC review of or ARC copy of The Witchstone by Henry Neff. I also had to start a book club book for this week, which I am loving so far. It's not usually my go-to, but it's called Betty by Tiffany McDaniel, about a mixed Cherokee girl in the 60s growing up in the Appalachian, Ohio area. So it's really rough, but very good.
Okay,
What are
cool.
you reading?
I am also
This.
still reading the same book as the last 2 weeks, The Last Argument of Kings by Joe Abercrombie. Still slow progress. It's kind of how my reading goes. The beginning of the book is usually pretty slow, and then once I get past like the halfway point, I can kind of speed through the rest of it. But yeah, it's been a slow reading and writing week for me, so
Me too. Me too. It's all right.
summer also tends to be like the busiest time for work for me, so I'm fully anticipating this to last for a few weeks at least. So
Yeah, it's all
I
right.
wouldn't anticipate any like major reading or writing updates from me in the next few weeks, but that's
It's
why,
all right.
if anyone's wondering.
Yeah, I get it.
So for podcast updates, we are still working on social media accounts. Like I said, we're just kind of doing that in our free time. We're both super busy. So I did finally get sorry, did you have something to add to that?
Nope, I'm just giggling to
Oh,
myself.
okay. I thought I wasn't looking at the camera, so I thought I like missed something. But no, Ash has been patiently waiting for me to upload the episodes to a cloud folder so she can actually use them. And I totally took way too long to do that, but I finally got them up for you, so apologies.
So I think this means like in the next month or two, probably within the month, but after the chaos of the next couple of weeks, we will have a working Instagram and a working TikTok, and we can start posting snippets, and that way you can, follow along. And if you miss us during the live, you can catch up at a later time.
And audience questions. We don't have any for this week. And our indie release spotlight is pretty brief. We actually have two books that are releasing on the same day. One of them from one of our anthology authors. I almost lost what I was going to say there. Our local pirate captain, as I like to call him, S.M. Campbell, is releasing his second book in his Eldritch Depths series, Tainted Seas, on June 9th. Also on June 9th is going to be The Prince of Paradise, also a book two of a series by I.D. Marie. And I believe both of them are also going live later tonight. If you guys want to just jump over
Oh,
right
nice.
after ours, they should be on around 9 Central Time, I believe. So
Okay,
if
awesome.
you if anyone wants to go over there, just give them a little shout out. But yeah, that's all I have for indie book releases for the week. Unless Ash, you had any to add to that. Sorry, I totally didn't mean
I
to
did not.
just
No, you're
get.
good. I did not have any.
Okay.
Nope. None for me.
I realized I just kind of sped through those last three sections because they were all kind of brief this week.
So it's okay. I'm completely out of it and very brain dead today, so I apologize if there's less feedback from my normal
That's okay.
interjections this week.
Today has been kind of mentally exhausting for me, so I apologize as well if I seem a little out of it today.
Yep. We're doing our best, like I said earlier, and we're gonna just keep on keeping on.
That's all we can do. All right, well, maybe we'll start with our indie publishing and book topics, or business topics, sorry. I don't know why I said books. We've got three today. This first one that I put here is the one that I actually pushed from last week because I was trying to save us a little bit of time. But it's publishing in different languages. Stories are universal. They're something that are shared across cultures, borders, and languages. And so, knowing that, have you given any thought into like what the broad reach of, your books is going to be like? Is that something that you would like to shoot for in the future with A Filthy Hunger or maybe something else? Like, would you like to see your books published in another language? And then I guess actually as a follow-up to that, is that something, are you bilingual? Do you speak multiple languages or is that something that you would have to outsource?
I would have to outsource. I do not, unfortunately, speak any languages outside of English fluently. It is one thing that I don't have a penchant for languages, which is surprising. I did Latin for 3 years, but you don't really have to speak that. You just have to read it. So my fluency in anything but English, and even that sometimes is like, oh gosh. I think it is great to have anyone's books published in any language other than their original language. It's interesting because I have read a few other books that have been translated to English from different languages, and it's always interested me like how themes and tone can be translated like that. Because sometimes things don't translate directly, right? Like, take German, for example. They have words for feelings that we don't know how to describe ourselves in English and vice versa and all that kind of stuff. So I'm always curious, maybe that's something I can look into more for a future podcast, but how much of that translation either has to adjust for that demographic or if anything changes with it, like if they have to come back and say, hey, so this feeling doesn't translate, this is what we're going to use instead, does this change anything for you? Anyway, it's interesting. But yeah, I would love that, of course. I would have to outsource it
Yeah, no, same boat. I know like bits and pieces of a bunch of languages. The two, I guess, that I would say that I'm the most proficient in, which is still not much, is
for
one, also Latin, because that's what I took in high school for 2 years, and then Arabic, because I know
Oh.
a lot of people from the Middle East, but I'm still
Oh, amazing.
not nearly talented or skilled enough in either of those languages to like full on translate a novel and make sure then the themes and tones stay consistent. Like I'm not even
Right.
confident in my speaking ability of Arabic. Latin obviously
Yeah.
is not something that you speak, like you said, anymore.
Right.
So,
Right.
but yeah, no, it's difficult because it, like you said, getting the right themes and tone and everything to kind of stay consistent across different languages can be challenging. I
Yeah.
just remember from high school when I would get the Latin translation assignments and they were like, translate this literally, do not make it sound any better. And I was like, but it sounds
I
wrong. I
love
need to
it.
fix it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a challenge. I'm always impressed by people who speak more than one language, and which is most of the world at this point, I feel like. It's just, but yeah. No, I think it's important because that's why, that way you're, it's not just influence, but it's the dissemination of ideas that might not previously have been discussed or touched on or written about in that language. I'm sure that happens like rarely, but you never know. I think one of the most like profound books, and I can't remember the title of it right now, which is funny that I say that because I just said it was profound, but the concept of it really stuck with me. It was a kind of like a memoir, and it was a woman who really wanted to learn Italian, and so she started taking classes with a woman, and then just up out of nowhere moved her whole family to Italy just to immerse herself and her family more. And then when she wrote this book about the experience, one page would be in English and one page would be in Italian. So she had like taught herself how to write in both languages too, which was just so impressive and like such a cool dichotomy, Anyway, yeah, so I love that kind of stuff. I think it's so neat.
That is really cool. It kind of reminds me of I've heard some of my Arab friends, they will talk in both languages at the same time, like they'll mix them.
So
It's
cool. Yeah. Oh.
it's difficult to keep up with because I only understand one of them. So
Yeah, right.
I mean, I
And I
can
feel like those
understand a little bit, but
languages, like, yeah, you're like a few things here and there. It's also like, I know Americans can talk really fast, like people from New Jersey, especially in New York. But I feel like Hispanic and Arabic languages, just like they speak so quick and fast that you're like, whoa. Like it's equally even more impressive, honestly, when they like can switch back and forth at that speed. You're like, whoa. Very cool.
Let me just double checking if I had any
Sure.
additional questions here. This last bit here. Are you an avid reader of stories from other cultures or that have been translated? I know you said you read a few, but is that something you actively seek out or just kind of if it's, the right story for you?
I don't necessarily seek out like specific stories. I love folklore. So I love reading folklore specifically from Japan and like Europe in general, but those two I tend to just like absorb really well, only because I've like lived there, like England and then Japan. So yeah, like Japanese or East Asian folklore and myth, I have a soft spot for. I used to like check out books on mythology and just like read those all the time. Much, I mean, less now, but I've got, yeah, that's something that if I see, I don't know, a book that includes East Asian mythology or a mythology that I've never heard of before, I'm like, oh, I want to read that. And so, yeah, I guess kind of, yeah. What about you? Do you have any preferences in terms of stories you pick up?
I don't think I have any like preferences, but I do actively seek out stories in that come from other cultures, typically ones that have been translated so I can read them. But yeah, no, I just like immersing myself in different cultures. I like learning about them. And I feel like stories are a great way to do that. And especially if it is a language that you're learning, like when I was learning Latin in high school, they had us read the Aeneid by Virgil and translate it like as you were reading it. So it can be a really useful tool. And I know my brother who loves learning languages, he learns like three at a time. I don't know how. But
Wow.
he like when he wants books, he'll ask for them in the languages he's learning so he can immerse himself further into those languages. Like
Wow,
I
that's
think
amazing.
Yeah, like for Christmas, I bought him books that were in like Norwegian or something. I don't even remember what language he was learning at the time, but
Holy cow, that's so cool.
yeah, no, it is cool. I wish I had the discipline to learn that many, but I'm still
Me too.
working.
I wish. Yeah, I don't. I just don't know. My brain doesn't work that way. I've really genuinely tried multiple times to learn like Japanese and then German and then, for some reason it just doesn't click. My brain doesn't necessarily work that way. I'll blame it on that and not my lack of like ability or desire to learn.
I think there is some scientific backing to that because, like, the best time to learn a new language or really any language is from a young age. Like, the older you get, the harder it gets because at a young age, you are learning how to communicate already. So, doing both in tandem kind of makes sense. But when you're older and
Yeah,
you've
that's
been
true.
used to communicating a certain way for so long, it can be challenging to kind of retrain your brain to adapt, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Okay, on to our next topic. This one kind of circles back to the website you were talking about earlier, but author newsletters. So this is something that a lot of authors have just to keep readers and fans updated on what they're doing, what their latest work is, and things like that. How do you feel about newsletters, like as a reader and a writer? Is it something that you subscribe to, like when it comes to authors you read? And then with the website that you're building, is that something you have thought about or already kind of set up and plan to send out on like a regular basis?
Yeah, so I think I only have signed up for two in the past, which I'm bad at email. Like I've used the same email address for like over a decade at this point, so a lot of it's become spammy, and I'm determined to one day like go through and unsubscribe from all the crap. That way it can just like sit pretty. So I tend to, those tend to get deleted on accident. I think newsletters can be super helpful in this day and age of social media. I think if you entice, which is what I'm going to do with mine, and like you said, like you haven't updated yours in a while, but I'm not going to be like sending out weekly emails. One, the open rate for newsletters are really is really low. So I feel like if it's like once in a while, more people are going to click and be like, "Oh, I haven't heard from her in a minute." And so, sure, I'll read what's up. But I think it's a good like way to entice potential readers for like any new project about like I'm going to show you behind the scenes stuff or longer snippets of work in this newsletter. I'm not even going to put anything on social media in relation to the scene, right? So then you get like a tidbit, you get like a this, that, and the other. I also think authors who write about their writing process in newsletters rather than talking about it necessarily on social media, it feels more personal and it feels more like you're getting advice and following along someone who's also potentially struggling to write. V.E. Schwab, I've said this before, but her Instagram is kind of fantastic because she does that on her Instagram, but most authors I follow don't really talk about how challenging it is to write or whether or not they're stuck. So I like newsletters, despite not reading as many as I probably should. The concept I enjoy. Yeah, I think I'm gonna do that. I like I said, I'm going this weekend and traveling, so that's gonna be like my first newsletter to anyone who does subscribe this week. It's just gonna be like, here's what I did on my travels, and put little blips and blops in there. Just yeah, I think it's nice. I think it's a way to like entice people in kind of like an old-fashioned way, even though it's like still the internet. What about you?
I don't know how many I'm subscribed to because I think most of them get forwarded to my spam or something by this point, and
Oh
so
no,
I don't
yeah.
actively open a lot of them, but I know I've signed up for quite a few.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think they're a great way to kind of offer like exclusive information or looks at works or things you're working on.
Yeah.
Obviously the one I follow is the most is George R. R. Martin's Not a Blog, he calls it, even though it is a blog.
Oh, funny.
He kind of just posts whatever on there. Like usually it's usually related to stuff he's writing or doing in Hollywood, but sometimes it's like
Yeah.
completely random. Like I remember once he put a particularly like depressing nihilistic post out there that was just like it came out of nowhere and everyone was like, "Are you okay?"
That's so funny. Yeah, I feel like that's a way for authors to be a little bit more authentic. Maybe that's what I was trying to say earlier in a more concise. It just shows more authenticity than what we see on social media, you know?
So when it comes to like mine, I don't have a newsletter that goes out via email just yet, just because I was struggling to get it set up with Squarespace, which is where I host my website.
Yeah, same.
But I do plan to get it updated and kind of tie it into my blog at some point and then just have them kind of work in tandem. But I do have
Yeah.
a blog on my website, and like I said, it's been a few months since I made a post there. I used to post there pretty consistently, but I started to feel like I was trying to post just for the sake of posting. And
Yeah.
like you said, I don't want to get into the trap of like it's just a weekly post that really has no value and doesn't offer
Sure.
anything to the reader. So
Yeah.
I've kind of scaled back a little bit and just been waiting to post until I have something a little more meaningful and exciting to share.
Right.
Trying to think about it from like a reader perspective, like okay, I could post my ramblings like George R. R. Martin, but I'm not George R. R. Martin, so I don't think people just want to hear the random guy on the internet talk about
Yeah.
these things. Like George will post about football sometimes, which I find pretty funny.
That's interesting because you just kind of like made me realize that. I mean, this sounds so dumb and stupid, but like newsletters and blogs are different things. Like, I mean, obviously they work separately and in different ways, but like what gets press or what gets published in a newsletter versus what gets published in a blog, right? Like,
Yeah, that too, right? Like, I'm
yeah.
trying to do both, so I have to figure out what should go in each. And do I just like copy and paste the blog post and put it in the newsletter, or
Right.
so? Yeah, that's a tricky thing to navigate to that I haven't quite figured out because I haven't started sending out newsletters yet. So, I
Yeah,
do
you know
plan
what?
to.
That'll be my fun fact for next week's update is I'll do some research for some advice, I guess, on like what would you put in what gets shared in both versus one or the other. So, 'cause I don't know off the top of my
Yeah.
head. I'm
Yeah.
like just copy paste, but people don't want to reread the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting. All right.
That'll be a fun thing to research for next week. Good idea.
Thanks. I'll put a note so I don't forget. All right. Cool.
I think that, oh, real quick, what are some, I think we already touched on this a little bit, but are there any other important considerations for you, like when it comes to reading or writing a newsletter, or now, I guess that we've mentioned it, a blog from an author?
No.
I think we
I
touched
just,
on most of like
yeah.
everything. I like to make sure we didn't miss anything, but.
I think I have much to learn about newsletters versus blogs, so I
Same.
will circle back.
All right, this one is a kind of a fun topic. I think it's fun because I like talking about, or well, I don't know, I don't like talking about it. I like thinking about money. I think everyone likes thinking about money,
No,
but
I hate thinking about money. I think about money way too often.
okay, well,
No thanks.
maybe I should rephrase that.
Also just giving you flack. I know what you mean.
Well, I real now the way you reacted, I was like, yeah, that might have come off the wrong way. So, because I understand what you're saying, I also now that you say that, I'm like, wait, no, I hate thinking about money. What am I talking about? It depends on how we're thinking about the money. Okay, that's really what it comes down to.
Yes, got
okay. Anyway, on the topic of money, book pricing, a fun topic. I've seen a lot of. Not recently, but just a lot of discussion kind of around like what people are willing to pay for books when it comes to the type, like the format it's in, how long it is, and just various other factors. And so, I mean, I don't think I have a lot to say on this, but I was just curious, when you are shopping for a book, how do you look at pricing? Do you have like a limit for certain formats? Is there does book length come into consideration? Like what do you consider when you're buying a book? And then how does that play into how you think about book pricing from the perspective of like an author who's going to publish one day?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I have a bit of a gripe with the book publishing world because the prices have gone up for books of like all kinds, but the quality seems to have gone down. You know what I mean? I don't There are so many books that I have bought in the past few years that like after a couple of reads, this it's like separating from the spine and the pages are really thin or like some things are a little crooked. So I think in the past, it's always been like if I really want the book, I'm going to buy the book. I like special editions. The only special editions I have that I bought after I bought the book series, so I have like two sets of the same series, is the Cruel Prince or the Folk of the Air series. But if I know an author is putting out a book of a series that I like let's say I've read the first book, like Leigh Bardugo, Ninth House, right? I bought the first book and I was like sick, but I bought the special edition of the second because I was like, I just want to have nicer editions of these books. And the edition was not that great. The illustration's phenomenal, but the quality itself, it just was lacking. Same with a couple of others I've had recently. I say all this to say, nowadays, whereas price wasn't necessarily a factor, if it was hardcover, I'm like, all right, I think 25 is usually like my cap, unless it's a big girl like Priory of the Orange Tree. I bought paperback because I was like, I'm not spending $40 on a hard cover version of this. It's like 1,000 pages. So I think I still have that because the quality just sucks so much now for most of these that I just am not willing to spend money anymore on books. I've actually gone on a book buying ban for myself for this very reason. I'm like very much utilizing my library now, which I encourage more people to do, especially if they're trying a new author out. But yeah, I think it tends to be a pretty heavy factor in ha if I buy a book. I usually will not buy a book from an author I don't know right off the bat. I'll look at reviews first and then see if it's available at the library first. Just because you never know. I've been gypped before. So anyway, yeah, I don't know if that answers the question. Again, I'm scattered today,
No, yeah,
but
it does. I think the only piece left was how do you, as someone who's going to publish one day, does that like change your perspective on book pricing at all, or do you have any additional thoughts on that from that perspective?
Yeah, it's a hard. I feel like kind of caught in the middle. I want, in order for it to be affordable for everybody, often that means that the quality of the item is going to be less than. The flip of that is that I want it to be the best version of this book that I can produce, and therefore, if that means extra money and therefore extra cost for the consumer, to me that could be worth it. For self-published authors, I this is curious, another thing to potentially look up. I've never seen anyone do this, but I've always been interested in the pay what you will concept. Where I went to undergrad at Mary Baldwin, there's a Shakespeare theater there that's really well known, and they had pay what you will nights, and a lot of places do this now, where it's like if you can only afford $5, you pay five. If you can afford 30, then whatever. And so I've always wondered if we could translate that into the book world, especially for self-published. Like, if I only have so many copies of this book, maybe like 10% goes to pay what you will. So those who can't necessarily afford the full price can still experience it. Or ebooks now are a great resource, but a lot of people don't either have like the Kindle option or just don't like reading on a digital device. So how does that translate? So yeah, I think I'm caught in between. I don't necessarily have like a full frontal like yes or no answer to this question. Too many factors, I think, for me right now, especially since I'm, still so far away from being published. But for you, for the anthology, has that been like a consideration? Because I know our proceeds are going to go to charity, but in terms of how much you charge, has that been a factor?
Yeah, so I think for the anthology, my goal is to keep the price as low as possible. Like, obviously, it needs to be enough to cover, like Amazon has a minimum, like this is what covers production, and then
Yeah, right.
everything above this goes to you. So obviously, it needs to hit that minimum. So that largely depends on page count. Like a
Yeah.
400 page book is going to be a lot cheaper to produce than an 800 page book.
Sure.
So right now, just trying to see where our page count lands first, and
Yeah.
because I don't think it's going to be like Storm of Swords or Priory of the Orange Tree where it's in the thousands, but it could be in the higher hundreds depending on how long some of these stories are. So
Yeah.
because I was close to having to split into two volumes if we had like a few more people come on. So but yeah, I think my goal is to keep the price as low as possible. One, enough to cover the cost of production, obviously, and then enough to make that like each sale contributes a decent amount to charity. I was thinking like
Yeah.
mate, we're looking at still low dollar amounts, like
$2 to $3, like
Sure.
profit that would go to charity, and that's on paperback. I haven't looked at hardcover just because I know that's a whole other beast. And then ebooks are also very different because there's not really a production cost to that. There's just the royalties that
Sure.
Amazon takes. But yeah, it's difficult to navigate because you want to set a good price that feels fair and that you think people will pay. Like obviously
Yeah,
you
of
don't want to
course.
set it too high and then no one buys it, because then that defeats the whole purpose of putting the book out there. But I've put out polls in the past to see, like, just to get an idea of what people are willing to pay for different formats, and it's pretty much what I thought, where it was like 99 cents to $5 for ebook was the majority. And then I believe it was like fit mostly f towards 15, but also some people leaned towards up to 20 for a paperback depending on size. And then hardcover, like you said, it was about like 25, 30 depending on the size. So I think I have a good idea of what people expect to pay for certain formats, because I wasn't really surprised by any of those polls. But yeah, I think when it comes to the anthology, definitely can say we're going to keep the price as low as possible while also ensuring we can get some money towards our charity goal. But yeah, I think as a reader also, I kind of fall in line with those polls that I just said. Like, those are kind of what I'm willing to pay for each format. Typically I lean towards buying paperback just because I find it to be a nice balance of, like, the book is portable enough for me to bring it with me. I like the feel of paperbacks for the most part. If I buy a hardcover, it's usually going to sit on my shelf to look pretty.
Oh, it's interesting. I'm the opposite.
Oh, really?
I find paperback I like don't want to bend the paperback and
Yeah.
like the wear and tear of the spine is more obvious to me, and I'm pretty hard on my books. Maybe that is just like a personal thing, but I like hardcovers because they feel sturdier, and so I can like put it in my backpack without worrying like the front cover is going to be
Yeah.
bent, or I can like chuck it in the back of my car without it feeling. So that is interesting.
No,
I
yeah,
am
that totally
really
makes
hard with my
sense.
books.
The reason I'll get a paperback is because I just can't read ebooks very well. I've talked about ADHD. Like, I'll just switch apps on my phone if I'm on Kindle. But I like the paperback because it's like flexible enough. I know it definitely does wear and tear easier than a hardcover, but I think that's also why, like, if I do like the book enough, I will buy like the special edition hardcover to put on the shelf, not necessarily to read, just that's the pretty one. This is the one that I actually read.
No, I
But
totally get
yeah,
it.
I definitely agree. If you want like durability, definitely pick hardcover, because I've had
Hardcover.
paperbacks where the front and the back cover have just fallen off, so it's just the pages of the book now. But yeah, it's
Now, here's a follow-up, and it's not related to book pricing. Are you
okay.
a spine cracker? Are you someone who opens the spine and like pops it so that it can read nicely, or are you like a very like formal
Oh no, I try to be like really gentle
keeps
with it. I don't always do a good
it?
job, but what about you? Do you crack the
It
spines?
honestly depends. It honestly depends. If it's a big sucker, I will crack the spine just because I tend to like read when I'm like half laying down or on the couch, and I have like I don't know, I don't want to be like holding it open. So sometimes it is nice to have it. But I am for the most part like I try not to. But usually by the middle I'm like reading so fast that I'm like, whoa, that it just happens on accident. So I just gotta be careful. I'm just rough on my books with like I'm rough with everything in my life, with my shoes, my clothes. I'm just a naturally aggressive person, I guess. Anyway.
Well, I think that's everything I had to say on book pricing. Did you have anything else to add on that before we move on?
I don't think so.
Well, we can move into our weekly writing topics, but as always, we start with our dreaded this week work in progress check-in. Ash, I think we both have the same update for this week, but you first. How's your writing going?
Well, after the high of finishing finally after 6 months, chapter 7 last week, my brother gave me flak this. He's like, every week is a busy week, Ash. I'm like, no, you're right. But last week seemed to somehow be busier than usual, so I did not get any writing done. This week also suddenly became very busy. A bunch of stuff came up. So I'm hoping that I can, this weekend, since I will be away, and the whole purpose is to just write, that I will be able to have a better update for you next Tuesday, Brandon.
It's okay. Don't worry. I'm not like tracking your progress over here or anything.
No, no, no. I feel no. It's more just kind of like almost like accountability buddies. If we say every week that we don't have anything, you know, it's like I should feel. It's been a heavy reading week for me. I will say it's been like very much. I've been absorbed by books that I have in front of me rather than books that are yet to be written. So, yeah.
I hope this isn't prying too much, but it sounds like maybe you get to have some more family time this weekend or this week, or is that?
No, I'm doing this all by myself. Oh, I'm like going out in the middle of nowhere and just kind of like taking a writing vacation. It's been busy with just like doing stuff with friends. Like I'm going to see Beetlejuice tomorrow night and then book club is on Thursday. And so it's just has become a thing, you know, just like every evening is like tonight with the podcast. And then it's like afterwards I need to get stuff ready for dinner. So just
I promise I'm not avoiding my check-in, but are you like me where if you have like 2 hours of free time, you notice like you consistently have this free time every day or something, so you're like, I need to fill that in with something, and then you suddenly realize you have too many things that you've given yourself to do?
Not necessarily, no. I'm more of just like, I have 2 hours free. Oh, I should probably write. And then I get sucked in on accident to something else. More, it's like less like planned and more just like, oh, actually, do you want to go get a drink somewhere? Right. It like becomes less, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Well, no, that makes sense too.
I'm
kind of similar, but more leaning more towards the planned side where like, I'll notice I have an hour every Wednesday consistently that's been free, and I'm like, I should do something, and then I start to get into the trap of my day is too planned out that I have like no buffer and I've given myself too many things to do.
It's hard because in the evenings I really, really enjoy just like sitting and watching movies with my partner, and so I'm like, oh, sometimes it's good to say no and just be like, I gotta get other stuff done.
Yes.
But then, you know, by the end of a long day, I'm kind of like, no, I want to watch a movie. So it's a give and a take.
Well, my writing update is pretty much the same as you. I really didn't get any writing done this week.
Your note in the file just cracked me up when I read it earlier. I was like, same frowny face.
I don't know if you noticed, but I skipped the writing, the work in progress check-in section, and I filled out everything else first.
No,
and
then I didn't notice back. That. No, that's so funny. I did miss that.
No. I thought you would notice. Yeah.
Nope, didn't notice, but that is hilarious. You're like, dang it, I have to say same.
It's you can only find so many ways to say that before it starts to sound like you said it's
no, an accountability. I totally agree. But, it is.
But yeah, hopefully I'll have some more writing time coming up. Like I said, hopefully. Summer is usually a busy time for me, so I wouldn't.
Yeah, I understand.
I wouldn't expect a major update from me anytime soon, but we're gonna gradually get there.
We'll figure it out.
Well, on to some fun writing topics for when we both do find time to write. The first one I have is antagonists. I wanted to talk a little bit about these because antagonists tend to be my favorite characters for whatever reason. I love to hate a good antagonist. and so I just wanted to get your thoughts. Like, how do you approach writing your antagonists, and then as a reader, what are some likes and dislikes you have when it comes to, I feel like I said antagonists too many times, but antagonists in your stories?
Take a drink every time. I also love antagonists. I think recently, and when I say recently, and I could be completely wrong, people can be like, no, this isn't true, but in the last like 30 years, antagonists have really become less the dark evil trope type and more like complex. Does that make sense? Yeah. So And I think that's shifted our perspective. Like we're seeing more like morally gray characters too, right? We want people that seem more real. You want to be able to like look at an evil person and say you're evil, and that's easy. But it's much less diff I mean, it's much harder to look at an antagonist who has valid reasons to be who they are and say, well, you're evil. I also feel like that adds more complexity to the protagonist's character arc eventually. It's like, how can someone, very often condemn or fight someone who has, like I said, good reasons too. So I love them. And in approaching my antagonists, I have quite a few in mind. There are, one is a group, like a collective. One is, anyway, and two others are of the gray area because of that reason. I'm like, well, if you listen to their stories, you're like, I mean, I might be bad too because of that reason, right? Doesn't excuse their actions, but it makes it interesting. So I wanted to find like a good balance between people that you can relate to even as the bad guy, while also still having the classic big bads in there that you're like, screw this guy, he's just Sauron, like he's evil for evil's sake, kind of just you're bad from the inside. So yeah, I think it's that's kind of how I approach it. It's like I do take a little bit from my life of people who have wronged me in the past and just been like, okay, well, why if I felt this way, why did I feel this way? Was it because I felt like unheard or they mistreated me or they stood for something that I morally didn't agree with? And then I kind of transform that into some of the big bads in mine. I with my antagonists, I feel like also like my main characters can dip into being antagonists. Like because it's a dual point of view, Kara is Baltair's antagonist at the beginning and vice versa because they're enemies, right? Like they don't like each other for various reasons. And so they have to kind of work through that and just realize like, oh no, we have to be the heroes together. So we're those guys. Don't know if that made sense at all. But yeah, I
No, I
think
think.
writing bad guys come easy to me. I can slip into that role very easily. I don't know what that says about my psyche, but it's sometimes it's easy to be bad, You're just like, what would I do? I wouldn't do that, so I'm gonna write about that. What
I feel like I'm in the same boat where I almost enjoy writing the antagonists more
about you?
than the protagonist. I just find, and that's true in my reading as well. Like, I just find that a compelling antagonist interests me a lot more than a compelling protagonist. Like, your protagonist can be very generic and boring, but if you have an interesting kind of enemy for them to face. I'm trying not to say antagonist too many times. It really pulls me into the story a lot more than, a good hero or something would. I don't know why. I just like complex characters like that, and it's really interesting to explore why, like you said, now that we're kind of getting away from the this guy's evil, like just for evil's sake. Now that we have these more complex characters, and you can kind of understand how they arrive to the point that they're at without necessarily agreeing with it, I think that makes the stories a lot more interesting to read. It also can, I feel like there's a lot more to take away from stories and that have antagonists that are written that way, because they can almost, at least for me, when I read A Song of Ice and Fire at like 16, 17, I feel like it really helped me to see other people's perspectives because the story itself is told from so many different perspectives, and a lot of them are conflicting with each other. Like, you have the Lannister perspectives and then the Starks very much opposed to each other. And reading that during those formative years really taught me that, like, how valuable it is to see the world from other people's perspectives, even if you don't necessarily agree with them. So I think it's a good evolution of storytelling, and I definitely lean more towards the more morally gray, complex, like you. And then I just wanted to say your dynamic between your two, protagonists sounds really interesting. And
Yeah,
so I'm
thanks.
actually excited to read about that. I did open up your preview that you shared on Instagram, but I didn't get a chance to read it yet.
Oh, yeah, you'll have to let me know when you do. Literally no pressure with everything else. But I was like, I might as well like tease people and just be like, this is kind of my writing style and how this is going. And so, yeah, anyway. So, yeah, you'll have to let me know. But I felt like it was good to, I don't know, like the enemies to lovers is not really a trope from this story. It's more of like enemies to allies to eventually lovers, but based off of like trust and understanding and like whatever. But I felt like they had to be like really hateful towards one another at first for that to feel like, you know, feels good at the end. So yeah, I'm excited.
Well, that sounds cool. That sounds like it'll be like a really natural, or at least that's what you're shooting for, like a really natural
Yes.
development of the relationship, rather than
Yes.
trying to like meet the trope in book one or whatever.
Yeah, that's why I like when I tell people, I'm like, it's a dark fantasy. And then they go, well, is there romance in it? And I'm like, yes, but like, that's not important, right? Like, it's not why this book is being written. And I love romance in my fantasy, but I like that to be backseat, sometimes trunk of the story versus like, you know, what's driving them. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think like I do like romance in my fantasy as well. I think it works really well in just in the setting and the worlds that you can create. But I don't like it to be like the focal point of the story. But I do like it to be there. I don't like it to not be non-existent.
Yeah, exactly. You get me. You get me, Brandon.
I would hope so after 9 episodes, but
Yeah. Oh, so I will follow up question with the one that you wrote here, just so you know. Do you have any examples of well-written antagonists
Ooh,
that you
yeah, I forgot about
love?
that.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have thought about some before the show, because now I'm drawing a blank when I get put on the spot by my own question. But
I have some. Maybe that'll spur
let
some,
you
you
go
know.
first and
Okay.
I will
Okay,
marinate my
cool.
thoughts here, but
Yeah, so one of my favorite antagonists is Draco Malfoy. I
yes.
think his character, like once you find out how horrid Lucius Malfoy and like being forced to be a Death Eater, whatever, you can argue about this all day, I know, whatever. But I think his character arc is just so fascinating and so interesting. And he was like the guy you love to hate, but also at the end of the story understood why he was the way he was. So I really liked him. Obviously Sauron is like, you know, the coolest guy to hate ever. I also think with Leigh Bardugo's The Darkling was very similar to Draco Malfoy's vibe of just kind of like you ended up understanding why he was the way he was, and him and Alina's kind of like complex relationship was interesting to see unfold. Those are the three off of the top of my head. I'm trying to like stare at my books to see. I think those are the top three that, yeah, that definitely come to mind.
I like the Draco Malfoy one. I think I'm gonna copy that one for one of mine,
Yeah,
because
there you go. You can have that one.
he's so good. Definitely one of my favorite characters just overall from that series.
Yeah,
And like you
same.
said, just so complex. You can sympathize, not necessarily agree with his actions, but understand how what or why he why he does what he does
Yeah.
and why he is the way he is.
Right.
I want to pull some from A Song of Ice and Fire, but it's a difficult. I feel like A Song of Ice and Fire doesn't have
Cersei,
defined
straight up.
antagonist. She's like the only one I can think of is like, yeah, she's really. And then there's like the ones who are very clearly like insane, like Joffrey. That
Yes.
one's obvious, but I feel like Joffrey's job isn't to be complex. Like, I feel like he's one of the few that he kind of is just there to be like, and not to say he doesn't have any complexity, but I feel like that purpose is served by all of the other characters, that characters like
Yeah.
Joffrey and Ramsay are kind of meant to be a break from that, and like you really are just supposed to hate these people.
Yeah, I think Littlefinger is kind of like
he's great.
Between
Littlefinger and Cersei, they're both great. I think Cersei, I really like Cersei because I love to hate her.
I just hate her straight up.
She's one of those complex characters that, like, right, she's just had such a terrible life, like, by all accounts, you know, trying to meet her dad's expectations, you know, Robert never really loved her and all of these things, but then it doesn't really excuse how she acts. And I like the dynamic between Cersei and Catelyn, because they both kind of share similar struggles, and they both care very deeply for their children, and they go about protecting them in very different ways.
That's a good point.
I've always liked Cersei for that. I think she just adds a lot to that story, even though I hate her guts as a person. I love her as a character. Littlefinger, I love as like an agent of chaos. He very much is like, you know, a great puppet master behind the scenes. I love his character too.
Excuse me.
Very interested to see how the books handle that, because I have a feeling that will be one of the things that's very different from the show. But
yeah, agreed.
Who else? I mean, I do like the insane characters too, that kind of just fit that role of like just hate them, like Joffrey, Ramsay. stupid one, but the Emperor from Star Wars. I like
him. Palpatine?
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, that's a good one.
But if I wanted to pick a complex one from Star Wars, I would say Darth Vader as well, because I feel like people like to hate on the prequels. I secretly like them, but I think Anakin is a really fun, complex character. Even if his arc may have been a bit rushed in the third film, I still really enjoyed it, and I like what they tried to do there.
I think Kylo Ren from the newer movies too was like something that everyone, I mean, the fandom went crazy for, like Reylo or whatever, but it, very similar vibe to Draco Malfoy in that kind of sense of just like corrupted, but he didn't really have a choice in that, right? Like he was never taught right from wrong. It was just like, take what's yours. So yeah, there are lots of good examples of like morally gray antagonists. That's always fun.
Like I said, I love antagonists. They're usually my favorite characters. So,
yeah, 100%.
Well, on to another important piece of stories, pacing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, in many cases, I'd say the rhythm of a story can make or break it. And with that said, as a writer, how do you approach the pacing of your own stories, and then as a reader and a writer, do you have any thoughts on what specifically makes a story well-paced or poorly paced?
Yeah, I think pacing is actually one of the things that most burgeoning authors struggle with. I'm finding it challenging in the short story. I've written a short story, but not to this extent. I'm finding it challenging in the first draft with the short story, but in terms of like what helps me, at least with A Filthy Hunger, is if I rereading also helps, right? Like I think last week we talked about reading things out loud. I'll go like months or so without reading my stuff that I've already written and then rereading it with fresh eyes. I already know that my pacing for chapter one is not the best, right? Like I could actually add more. So I think a lot of it is just, unfortunately, maybe instinct that eventually, if it's poorly paced, gets fixed in the editing phase. I think it's important to write more, not less, when you're writing your first draft, because you can always, it's going to get culled anyway or switched around. Writing out specific timelines. I don't think you need to write like on Monday this character does this, unless it's like a fast-paced murder mystery, you know, or something like that, where timeline actually does matter and you need to make sure that it falls within a decent time frame. For something like fantasy, in my in my opinion, unless you have someone who dates their work. I think, what's his name? I can't remember, but someone has like dates to their story,
Oh,
or
okay.
their book series. And I was like, oh God, that's crazy. So unless you have dates, specific dates, I think you can be more fluid. You don't have to do that, but it is good to pace out, chapter one, what happens here? How much time has to be spent in each place?
Yeah.
So yeah, it can make or break it. And so for myself, I definitely, because I am a plotter, I plot out what happens in each story or each chapter, excuse me. And because it's two points of view and these things are happening at the same time in different places, I really have to make sure that I have an actual like month to month or week to week deadline for things. Like Kara does this in this amount of time and then this happens. Like in chapter seven, a week has passed, so I indicate that that's been the case. I don't know, little things like that. This is a very scattered response, but I don't have any solid way to tell you how to pace correctly. Just, I don't know. I just block things out.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's for me, it's a lot of the rereading, like you said. Especially with fresh eyes, like I find that to be really important because sometimes it'll seem fine in the moment, and then I'll come back to it a few weeks later after having not read it, and then I'll notice the pacing feels a little off. And so I think it is one of those things that you kind of just can tell when it feels right and when it doesn't, and it's difficult to quantify why or give specific like reasons as to what's not working, at least for me. It is a lot of instinct and just knowing what feels good and what doesn't. I try to like, I mean, it sounds obvious, but try to just follow like a natural progression of events. Like, does it feel like these events are happening in a logical order and time frame, or does it feel very much like things are being like rushed or dragged out to suit the narrative? And it can be difficult to tell. So I think that's one of those things that it might also, like, if you're really struggling to determine, if your pacing is good or not, I think it can help to get another pair of eyes in those
Yeah, for sure.
situations. I think that's one of those things that I would most look for every time. I still don't know like how to disable that, but
That's all right. It keeps us on our mark, we're like, all right, 30 minutes left.
But yeah, no, I think it's like that's one of the things I'm definitely gonna look for when I do start like opening my story up for feedback is how does the pacing feel like. I don't want, I think it is one of the things that I struggle with the most too, like you said, for newer authors, because I think it's just one of those things that comes with practice, like most other aspects of the craft, but that especially.
I think, now that we're really thinking about it deeply, one of the things that I do, and I don't know if this is just instinct, is when I'm writing or outlining, let's say I'm just outlining a chapter, I focus specifically just on action at first, right? So like what needs to happen, because each chapter needs to reveal something important, right? It can't just be a filler where nothing occurs to further move the story forward. What needs to get revealed, what secrets need to be told, whatever. And then as I'm writing, obviously you don't want to fall into the white room syndrome, which is just you're only doing dialogue without really describing what's going on around you. What does place look like? You have to feel grounded. So I think for most authors, if you're starting out, just writing action points in each chapter and making sure each action that gets taken is going to push the story forward. If you spend two paragraphs discussing how your character is drinking wine, right? That's only going to work if your character is a sommelier, because that's important to the character, right? it's easy to kind of wax poetic about stuff, but is that drinking wine, is it poisoned? Okay, if it's poison, then of course we have action moving forward. But I think if you focus specifically on action there, that can really help mitigate any like potential gaps in pacing or a slower pace or too fast, right? If you have someone leaving the castle and then killing someone in the same chapter, but they've never killed anyone before, you know, then obviously that chapter needs to be turned into maybe five chapters, the lead up to the killing someone. You know what I mean? So I think that's my poorly given advice for pacing.
No, I like the focus on action advice, 'cause I think I kind of just subconsciously do that. Description, like vivid descriptions are things that I always come last for me.
Excuse me.
I very much focus on like the dialogue and what the characters are doing, and then I'll throw in the descriptions and try to fit those in naturally, to kind of complement what's already happening. But ultimately, in the beginning, it's just a lot of action and dialogue for me.
No, I get that. I think that your follow-up question with the do you have any thoughts on what makes for a well-paced story or a poorly paced story is, and I only said this, I'm only asking the follow-up to this because it triggered in my mind. If I don't understand how someone, like how a character got to this place, I think that makes a poorly placed, poorly paced story. If I feel like things are moving so quickly that I have to catch my breath and I have to be like, whoa, 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 did she say that? Or how was I supposed to know this? I think that makes for, that's like a red flag, poorly paced story. I need to feel grounded. So if I don't get any descriptors of where we are and what we're doing, I find that to be poorly paced. Also, just because we're not spending enough time in each area for me to feel like it's relevant, and therefore I'm like, okay, well, what are we doing? I don't understand. So I think those are my three. I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, it's difficult because it's not really something I actively think about when I'm reading, unless I'm noticing it's bad. So I would say if I'm actively thinking about your pacing while I'm reading a novel, it's probably because I'm not a fan of how it's paced. So because it's, I think it's one of those things I just don't notice otherwise. If it's paced really well, it's just I'm just into the story and what's happening, so I'm not thinking about wow, this is paced really naturally. So yeah, I think if I'm kind of turning ahead and like, okay, when does something interesting happen? That's usually a sign to me that it might be a little bit on the slower end. But sometimes I've had stories that are like that, and then I'm like, oh, okay, this slow buildup was worth it. Like the series that I'm reading right now, I'm drawing The First Law by Joe Abercrombie. A lot of it I've talked about, like the slow buildup, especially in book one. But I've always found with this series specifically that it did pay off. So like sometimes I can notice it, but then my thoughts will change by the end of the book. So it's
Sometimes you
difficult
just gotta give
to,
it time.
yeah. It's difficult for me to say specifically what makes, other than those things, a poorly paced book. I think if it, like I said, if it's well paced, I'm probably not thinking about it, so.
There you go. That's a good indicator.
All right, well, this one's a fun one. I wanted to talk about naming characters, 'cause everyone loves to, I think so. I think all authors like to name their characters. Maybe some people don't. Maybe you don't, and I'm going to learn something new today. But every character needs a name, so how do you approach naming your characters?
Okay, this is an additional resource that is not my resource for the day, which I ended up not writing on accident in our document. But
That's okay.
so I don't know if you've ever used Fantasy Name Generator before.
All the time, yes.
All the time. It is the actual best. I am so impressed by this website. So if you haven't used it, Fantasy Name Generator, it's not even just for fantasy names. It's real life names,
There's
historical
so
names
many
of
categories.
any, so many characters also, and categories. So actually that's where I start for the most part. I tend to, okay, fun fact about me, I have synesthesia. So I will often taste, like words will often have a texture or a taste or like a feel in my mouth. And often have like a personality of some sort. It's not schizophrenia, but it is just something that occurs. So if I, when I'm looking at the fantasy name generator and I'm saying the names out loud, I will write a bunch down that I'm like, ooh, good contender. But some will just click because it'll feel good in my mouth, or it'll like read and like the character of the word itself will have, it'll be like a lock slipping into place, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's got to feel right. I know that's kind of vague, but that's how I choose. I've got like names scratched everywhere, like on random pieces of paper. But I will also like, if I like, or I'm having a hard time with a fantasy name generator, I'll like take some that I've written down and like rework them, you know, like add a letter or take one away or like mix two together. So it's really just kind of like a, it's like cooking. You just kind of take some ingredients and eventually make something out of it.
So I'm curious, are there any like hard rules that you give yourself when it comes to naming a character? Like, I absolutely can't do this, or I'm like, the name must do this. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there, but I know some people have, like some people might be like, I can't name two characters a name that starts with the same letter. I can't have two S characters in this book.
No, I don't really have that. It has to fit in with the culture of the character that I'm working with. So like, Kara's like her, it's more like Italian seasides, like ancient seaside kind of style. So I keep more in line with names that sound a little bit more like that, or like Greek-esque. And then with Baltair's, it's more of just like that kind of Norwegian, Northern European style, kind of whatever. So I make sure that it fits within the realm of the place of that character. I think that's the most important, that those names be consistent with that. There can be some variation, but again, it goes back to me like, oh, this doesn't really fit because it just doesn't sound like the other names in, you know, like there's Kara, there's like Stefana, like a lot of us from her kingdom, and then with Baltair it's a lot of Elspeth and Dare, and like harder to say, like very firm loud names almost. That doesn't sound normal, but in my head, loud names. So yeah, those are my parameters. Do you have any that you're like, I can't name?
I definitely don't follow the one. I usually have too many characters to be able to follow that letter rule where you can't use the same letter twice.
That's so weird.
I've always found that to be too limiting, so I never stuck with that rule. Definitely make sure, I definitely try to make sure that it fits the kind of culture that that character comes from. So if it's like a northern, you know, Scandinavian inspired culture, I'll use names from that kind of that region, and see, definitely obviously throw like little fantasy twists into those names and stuff like that. I do like using the fantasy name generator, even if it's just as like a starting point. Sometimes I just go on there for fun because it's just a fun website to use.
But it is, you get lost, you're just like, whoa, so many names.
I try to consider the characters' personalities as well a little bit when it comes to the names. Like an example from the series that I never shut up about, A Song of Ice and Fire, just one of the notes that George R. R. Martin had, I've heard in an interview that he's mentioned about naming his characters, is making sure it fits their personality. Like the one he used in his, as an example, was Sansa and Arya. And Arya is a harder sounding name. Like it's shorter and it's more blunt than Sansa, which is a little more soft sounding and soothing, and it fits it fits their personalities, because Sansa's very much like a traditional, you know, Westerosi woman, and Arya's very much like tomboy. She doesn't want to you know,
Yes.
anything to do with Sansa. And so
Right.
it really suits their personalities. So I try to kind of consider that as well in my naming conventions. But I try not to let it get in the way too much because sometimes it can be a hindrance and
Sure.
I can't think of a name because I always feel like nothing fits. But
Yeah, no, I feel that. I'm always worried that it, when it goes, if you know, a publishing house takes me, that they're going to want to change the names. And I'm like, that's a hard line. Like, I just can't, you can't spend years writing a novel about two people who are named this. And then, you know, and at first I was worried, like, Baltair, which doesn't sound like an usual name, obviously. Like, I'm always worried that that's not going to be palatable to people. I don't know, because you have like Rhysand from Sarah J. Maas, or like Cassian or whatever. Is it sexy enough? Who's just, you know, whatever, all these crazy like little tiny author words. You're like, please don't change the name of my characters. I can't. So yeah.
No, I agree with the worry about them being like palatable. Like, is this going to be easy for people to say, or like, are they going to think this name's weird, or naming is kind of one of my favorite things to do, though. I have a whole list of like a giant Word document of character names for another project.
Oh, cool.
And one of the groups, like, this story has a bunch of factions, and one of the factions is like I don't know how to say it without spoiling anything, but the theme for like their names and their culture and stuff is like snakes. So a lot of their names have like S sounds, and it was really cool to play with that and come up with like, how do you make a human name that sounds like reptilian at the same time? So that was really fun to play with. But once in a while, and it's not too often, but there's always like the one character that it feels like I can never come up with a name for. It's always just like one or two characters though, and it's weird because I have a feeling that like by the time I'm done with the stories, you know, the name will come to me and I'll have it.
Yeah.
But it's just sometimes in those early stages, I'm like, nothing seems to fit this guy. And I don't know what to call him.
Yeah. It's almost like you really do have to just like wait until the name kind of like appears to you, or like, you know, comes into fruition, because, you know, as cliche as this sounds, like, you are creating an entity out of nothing, right? Even if they just exist on the page, they have weight, they are, if you're good at it, complex and multifaceted. So you don't want to like do this creation a disservice by naming them the wrong thing. And I found that like a lot of baby writers tend to like not do last names, which is always interesting. Like, when I read a lot of like Kindle Unlimited books, it'll be like they're just like one name, or their last name will be fit in like as an afterthought. And so last names have become, for me, weirdly, like a really essential component of the character. Like, not just because the two main characters call themselves by their last, like she calls him Taryn Mark and he calls her Morven, until they become better, you know, allies, and then they call themselves by their first name. But I feel like having a fully fleshed like first and last name like can also just like, it's that one extra step that can solidify a character as being more like well-rounded, I guess. So that's usually like something I tell people when I'm reading their first drafts or whatever. I'm like, what's their last name?
Yeah,
you know, but what's their family like, you know?
That's no, I like that you mentioned that. I actually do struggle with like surnames more than first names, but I feel like if you can come up with them though, it really does add to just, it adds that extra layer to the world building. And like, okay, these characters, you know, they have families that they come from, and what's the origin of this last name? And it's cool. It's one of the things I like about Westeros, right? Like, there's all these family names and
lineages and stuff, just holds a lot of weight. So you're like, of course I like take this character more seriously if they've got like a powerful last name, you know, and all this history behind it. So names are cool.
Let's see, I think they touched on all of the questions I had in there, but did you have anything else you wanted to add on naming characters? No. Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, we can move on to our weekly writing resources before we wrap up here. Yours is invisible to me, but I hear you still have one, so I will let
I
you share.
know. I
No,
do. I'm sorry.
that's okay.
I don't know if I've shared this before.
I always do that too.
Did
I'm
I?
like, have I shared this one before? But
Well, I did. We brought one in, which is the fantasynamegenerator.com. So
yeah.
if I've repeated this one, I still get a pass because
Yes, you do.
I said fantasy name
You
generator.
get three this year.
Okay. So I don't know, Story Genius. If anyone hasn't, okay, maybe not. Then great. Awesome.
No, I don't think
So
so,
as
but
you can tell, mine is very worn. It's how to use brain science to go beyond outlining and write a riveting novel before you waste 3 years writing 327 pages that go nowhere. It's a really fun resource. It is by Lisa Kron. And she goes through why we love stories, why our brains naturally want stories, and the science behind that, and what makes a good story based off of science. It is a really fun read. She has a friend that she uses as her guinea pig, and then gives Jenny's perspective on how she's writing a story from beginning to end. Jenny will come to her with a problem, and then Lisa will discuss why that's the problem and how to fix it. So it's more than just like a story arc help book. I really loved it. It's really fun. It's a really easy read. Obviously, I've bookmarked a lot. I will probably need to reread this again sometime soon. Would highly recommend. Yeah, it's just simple. She gives actual like problems and how you can find solutions for them.
That sounds really interesting. I'll definitely check that out. I like when we can connect like stories with science and how our brains work and things like that. I also think that's something my brother might like, so I might have to recommend that to him as
There
well.
you
But
go.
no, great resource. Thank you for sharing. We got two from you this week.
Yeah, two. Boom.
All right, well, my resource is going to be a bunch of YouTube videos for anyone who likes to
Nice.
be like me and have YouTube on in the background while they're doing stuff. You can do that very easily with
Okay.
these. One of my favorite BookTubers, his name is Daniel Green. He's very fun to watch, very entertaining. He does a lot of book reviews, but he's also a writer. He's published, I think, two or three books now. I've lost count. But he gets a lot of interviews with some big name authors. Brandon Sanderson's been on there. Joe
How
Abercrombie,
fun.
I believe Steven Erickson, author of Malazan, has been on there. Maybe Fonda Lee as well. Who
Cool.
else? Just lots of big names. One interview that I really liked, and they did a few videos together on the topic, was his interview with Evan Winter, who wrote Rage of Dragons, which is a kind of an African-inspired fantasy. So it's very different, but it's
Oh, neat.
very cool. And it was originally self-published, but then it got picked up by a traditional publisher. So he offers a lot of insight into how that happened and what he did to succeed in self-publishing, and then how he translated that into traditionally published success. I really like
Yeah.
those videos. But I just find that listening to authors who have been, somewhat successful, and most of the names that I named very successful in their work, it's very insightful and can give you some good pointers on how to, achieve some level of success in this industry. And it's really just interesting to kind of hear them talk for an hour at a time. And there's so many of them that I've listened to a bunch of these on multiple occasions, like repeated them. And they're just great listens. Like if you want something to put on in the car on the way home, it's kind of like a podcast format where they're just going back and forth and talking about different topics. And then, but yeah, that's sorry, a little bit of a
That's
ramble there.
awesome.
But
No, that's okay. I love it.
if you're someone who likes to listen to podcasts and YouTube videos and things like that, I think these would be great sources of research and insight into the writing and publishing industry.
Nice. No, that's always helpful, especially like interviewing a bunch of different authors, like getting multiple perspectives on similar topics is always nice just for being well-rounded, you know?
Yeah, I always like to get, the different perspectives, so.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's great.
Well, I think that's all from us. I think we are by ourselves at the moment, so I think we're going to probably skip the last call for questions and comments. I'll probably start posting. I want to start posting more often on my page about asking for topic suggestions, because I feel like that's also a good place. I just don't ask enough. So I'll definitely start doing that. But thank you to everyone who did join us, even if it was just for a few minutes.
Yes, thanks to everybody. Thanks to everyone who listens after.
Yes, that as well. I still need to do some work on that front and finding how to reach those people. But thank you to everyone who listens to us on things like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music. When we get our social media pages up, we'll be sure to like plug them here so you guys can follow us there.
Mm-hmm.
Ash, do you have any closing thoughts before we sign off for the night?
I don't, but it's always a pleasure, Brandon, and I look forward to it every week.
You as well. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I know it's been a busy week for both of us, so I appreciate your time.
Thanks. All right, I'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.